Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Bradley W. Skinner. Bradley is an educational thought leader, entertainer, former administrator, author, playwright, perspective giving speaker, and an expert in school culture and climate. He's known for his quick wit, creative thought, and humorous personality. Bradley was recognized as the 2018 Wyoming Theater Director of the Year, the current District Teacher of the Year, and in the summer of 2019, Bradley was honored by Justin's company as their National Educator of the Year. He's the host of the Stark Realization podcast and co-host of the web series Empower Half Hour, both focusing on current trends and best practices in the world of education. He recently added movie producer to his resume with his first film that is streaming, we'll talk about in the podcast, and he openly shares his knowledge, experience, and creativity with others. He speaks to students, staff, and communities throughout the country about how to think differently about schools, education, and life, and focuses on positive school culture and climate, determination, grit, social emotional learning. He lives in Southwest Wyoming with his wife, Melissa, and their three daughters. So welcome to the podcast, Bradley.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Well, thanks so much for your interest in being on the podcast. We'll dive right in and tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to grow up.
Oh, absolutely. So I one of the things I do love about your podcast is these stories, the being in the trenches. And what I really like is everybody seems to kind of have a different view. They see it through a different lens. And but even though as different as all of them are, it's nice to still see that there's a lot of commonality, that you let people know that they're not alone in what they're going through and what they're dealing with. And it might be, you know, small differences, but it's just nice knowing that there are other people that, hey, you know, life isn't always, you know, rainbows and unicorns. Sometimes it's just really tough, even when you're doing something that you absolutely love. And that's what my story was really about, is I absolutely loved teaching. I loved everything about it. I loved the kids. I loved the instruction. I loved seeing changes that were made in students' lives. I loved them seeing that they could be so much more than they originally thought. So being a theater director, and that's where I spent most of my time in education, was with theater, is that a lot of students I would have didn't want to be in theater. Sometimes they were put there because they needed that extra, that class. They needed to be put somewhere. A lot of times they were kind of the students that even the counselors would view as the delinquents, and they didn't have anywhere else to put them because other teachers simply could not handle them in their classroom and they had to go somewhere and they would end up in my room. And I would see such incredible success from these students that, you know, life changing. And it was just awesome. And so there's so much that I loved about education, but it was all the things that were not about education that I hated in education. The politics, the micromanaging, the disrespect. There was so much that just, I eventually became just absolutely demoralized and reached a point where I felt that I wasn't actually making a difference. And when that thought creeps in, it made it really, really difficult for me to see a need or a reason to even continue in education. And that was tough, because if my whole life and so much of my identity was tied into me being a teacher, when I started trying to picture myself not as a teacher, then that meant I didn't know who I actually was. And that led to a lot of anxiety about the future. It led to a lot of depression that I was going through, and I didn't handle it well. I didn't seek any help. I just figured, nope, that's not me. And I kind of grew up in a house where we just didn't really talk about personal, you know, or it was kind of, you know, walk it off and rub some dirt in it mentality. And so when I started having these major struggles, with depression, and I didn't have anyone to speak to, and I didn't know who to talk to, and I felt that I could just take care of it on my own, that mental health that was deteriorating quickly led into my physical health deteriorating quite rapidly. And I eventually found myself, after teaching about 12 years, where I finally was like, I have no idea what to do with myself anymore. And I was at such a bad state physically and mentally that I felt the only thing that I could do was to leave. And so I left teaching. I quit. I resigned, and I walked away with no intent of ever having anything to do with education again. I was just so damaged from it. And when you view yourself as being broken, it's, and you're not doing anything to help fix it, it makes it really easy just to view everything else in the world as being broken as well. And it was just, it was rough. It was really, really rough. I eventually led to a point where I couldn't hold down a job because I couldn't, I wasn't taking care of the mental health issues that I had. We lost our house. So I was now unemployed and homeless and no sign of bettering myself on the horizon. And that was definitely the deepest, darkest point of my life. And I think today we often talk, or I think, you know, even when we're asking students, we ask our students, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always dislike that question because it doesn't seem to give validation to what students are doing right now. You know, students can be amazing. Students can be incredible. And I think if we only look at what they can contribute in the future to being a valuable member of society, someday we're lessening who they are individually in that moment. And I will say that I have seen students, young teenagers, to become absolute heroes. And they were for me. So after I left, and I had a group of former students reach out to me as they saw the struggles that I was going through. One of those students happened to be a manager for a local pizza place in town. And he called me up and said, "Hey, look, I don't know what you're going through. I don't know why you're going through it. All I know is that I can be here for you. And until you get things figured out, why don't you come and work at the store for me?" And so that was a really pivotal moment, because I could either allow myself to be humiliated that I had reached a point in my life where I couldn't hold a job. I couldn't find success anywhere. I couldn't find anything. And it took a student to say, "Hey, come and work for me." Or I could allow it to be humbling that I had a student that cared that much about me, that was willing to say, "Hey, let me help, because you helped me when I was in your classroom. Let me help you." And that was huge. That really kind of was that turning point that helped get me out of that darkness that I was in, that showed me that there are still good people surrounding me that were willing to help. I just didn't see it at the time. And all it took was that one phone call from this student. And after I spent about a year working at that store with several former students of mine that were all now my employees, and more importantly, they were my friends, and they would share a lot of stories about teaching. They would share experiences they had in my classroom. They would share how they wish education would be, and that if they had adults that would listen to them, how they would want school to be, how they wanted their classes to be, how they thought education should be run. And eventually that led to, you know, about a year and a half total later, where they began telling me, "Look, you shouldn't give up on education. You should go back. You need to go back because we gained so much from your class. Don't rob other kids of that same opportunity." And so for me to be in that point where I thought I wasn't making a difference at all, to hear these kids say, "No, you did make a difference. You made a difference in our lives. And there are going to be other students that need that same thing from you in the future." And that eventually led me to coming back to teaching. And I'm grateful I did, because it has It's been amazing. Where I was in a place that I just felt no value, no worth, no purpose, to eventually finding that I needed to just change my environment. I needed to be in a different place that did all those things, that made me feel valued, that made me feel seen, that made me feel that and known that I was respected and that I mattered. And I think a lot of that really just comes from the school culture and the climate, the leadership, and what is it that they value and what do they want? And so once I found that, that made all the difference.
Yeah, no, and I find that very inspiring because, like, you had that 360 degree, like, you know, really leaving and with no intention of coming back, right? And really being like down in the dumps and, you know, finding your way back through working with former students and realizing, yes, your value as an educator to, you know, realizing the change needed to take place in the culture. And that can really go a long way in like keeping educators in the field is like how they're treated at work, how they feel valued and what kind of day they have, right? And also hearing those stories from those former students really help you feel like, yes, you know, you were making the difference in their lives. So yeah, that's a great story to hear about. And so you've talked a little bit about some of the, you know, lessons that you learned from that time. You do a lot of speaking now, working with, you know, teachers and students, speaking mostly on teacher retention. So tell me a little bit about, like, is that more kind of a large group? What kind of, is it keynotes? Kind of what type of speaking engagements do you do?
Yeah, most of it tends to be keynote addresses, whether that is for if I'm coming in to speak to students, then I'm definitely talking about my experience with how those students change my life and to make sure that students understand the importance and the value that they have and the difference they can make in the world right now. And if I'm speaking to educators, then if it's a, whether it's an educational conference, then it's typically focused really on teacher retention. Having been through that to where there was no teacher retention. There was really no desire for me to stay. I mean, once I started talking and saying, hey, I really think I can't do this. There was no attempt at teacher retention. It was okay. Bye. See ya. And I've seen that across the board. So when I actually first came back to teaching in 2014 and, I started talking and sharing of my own experience. One of the things I really noticed was that I wasn't alone. And the fact that there were numerous other teachers that were leaving, I started to see that trend increase. I began speaking out about the importance of teacher retention, because saying that they're on the horizon, we are going to have a major teacher exodus. And it kind of got blown off. It kind of got, you know, brushed to the side, like, no, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. And then, of course, COVID hit. And it was mass exodus after that. And it's just been on the rise. And so for years, I was speaking about, we can go, I speak often with Frank Rudnesky and Darren Peppard and Frank out of New Jersey, Darren in Nebraska. And so for years, the three of us have been talking about teacher retention and trying to avoid that mass exodus of educators. And now I'm never going to tell a teacher, don't leave education if they have something that they love, that they're passionate about, and that they have a great opportunity. If they have an opportunity to do more, to be more, by all means. But when I'm speaking of teacher retention, I'm mainly speaking about leadership that is not doing their job to a point that they are keeping good teachers in the classroom who want to be there. So it's those are two separate items. And I think a lot of times people don't recognize that those are two totally different things. If you have a great opportunity, take advantage of it. I'm totally fine with that. But if you want to stay in the classroom and you are making a difference, stay there. And it's kind of that, you know, Newton's law of motion. Teachers tend to want to stay in the classroom until something changes that direction. And it usually is a lack of proper leadership, because if the leaders aren't doing what they need to do to help those teachers, to protect those teachers, they're going to leave. And so that's mainly what I'm speaking on in those aspects, is just how to help good leaders, what to be looking for, how to improve, and to make sure that our good teachers that want to stay in the classroom are able to do just that.
And a lot of your speaking engagement, you speak through Codebreaker and Jostin's Renaissance, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, two amazing groups, and I'm just absolutely honored to be associated with both, because they do just amazing work in the world.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
Of education.
Yes, and I've spoken with several other guests that have done a lot through Jostin's and a few other Codebreaker authors. And then you also DJ. So sometimes you said you book to speak at a school, and then you ask if they'll schedule a dance around your DJing.
It is a lot of fun. And now, granted, it is a bit of an opportunity just to help myself be in schools, to be able to, again, to see a need and fill a need. And so I do perform as a professional DJ. I travel around the country. I do performances. And I perform under my stage name due to my similar look to Tony Stark from the Avengers. Okay. So my stage name is DJ Phony Stark.
Okay.
Which actually is a funny story, because that the name, I was looking at rebranding. I was trying to come up with something new several years ago, and I just, nothing was working. And then it was the first week of school, and a freshman is sitting in the front row and says, "Hey, has anyone ever told you you look like Tony Stark?" Which I get told all the time. So yes, I've heard it a million times. And a student sitting in the back row with his feet up on the desk, and he goes, "Huh, more like Phony Stark." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Can I have that?" So what do you mean? Like, no, you just came up with something really clever. I'm asking your permission if I can use it. You're going to send me to the office? I'm not sending you to the office. I'm complimenting you on something very clever and witty. He goes, "Well, most of the time, if I say something back to a teacher, they send me to the office." Yeah. Like, why? What you just said was incredibly thoughtful. It was clever. And it's your own idea. So I am asking your permission to use your idea. I would like to use that as my new DJ name. It's like, are you making fun of me? I'm like, dude, take a compliment, man. And so I ended up changing my DJ name. I used that, and then that totally changed from this student being, you know, that punk kid in the back who was trying to insult his teacher, to now all of a sudden he's like, wait, my teacher actually thinks I'm smart because I came up with something clever. And it changed the whole dynamic. And eventually he ended up graduating and then came and worked for my company. So it worked out really well.
Yeah. And I've seen that before, like students, when they come up with something witty, like they're not used to getting that recognition a lot of the time from teachers. So like, you know, him really, it taking a while for him to realize, you really wanted to take on that moniker. And that is also a name that you use in your podcast, the Stark Realization podcast. So tell me kind of about the evolution of the podcast. You say now it's mostly focused on interviewing students.
Yeah. So it started off just with a different interview. It was me talking about education, things that, you know, that I saw on the horizon, or issues that were hot trends at the moment. Eventually I started interviewing various guests, and due to that kind of success and seeing that a lot of students started saying, "Hey, we want to learn more about podcasting," it actually came as an opportunity then for me to start teaching students how to run a podcast, what they could do on their own, how they could create it, what equipment that they would need. And we kind of started like a podcasting club in our high school. And several of those students now have their own podcasts that they do, and they run weekly shows. Some of them are about, some of our students that are in the culinary classes, they do, you know, a baking podcast. Some, you know, do our English students that really like murder mystery genre started, you know, a podcast about their favorite mystery novels and stories. And so it's just been a lot of fun. But then as students got talking, they said, "Hey, if we're doing this, we want to learn from it. The best opportunity is to learn by doing." So they would just come on, and we now just talk about two or three topics. and you know that they'll come in prepared with, that from a student viewpoint, they're saying these are issues that we're seeing in school today, and that's what we want to talk about. Because so often we talk about culture and climate of a school, but a lot of times we're only interviewing or talking from an administrative viewpoint and then teachers to administration. So what are teachers seeing as difficulties? How are they helping it? But we don't talk and interview students nearly enough to get that feedback from a student viewpoint on how they view the culture and climate of their school. Because we might think, hey, we're doing a great job as educators. And a student might say, no, we're not. Even as, okay, well, what are we doing for teacher recognition? Are we doing a great job recognizing students and what they're contributing? But are we doing recognitions for the teachers to make sure that they're feeling valued, seen, and heard? And some of the students might say, no, I don't think I've ever seen something that you've done for the teachers, even if you're doing it. But if you're only doing it in staff meetings, the students are never going to see that. So how do they know? You're missing out on an opportunity for them to hear about their teachers. Or even better, you're missing out on an opportunity for students to be able to recognize their teachers and nominate their teachers for the great things that they're doing. And so being able to sit in a podcast and talk to kids about their viewpoint of the school, what struggles are they having? What are they seeing? What are they not seeing in school? And that really has helped us take some of those interviews and then to take those to our administration and say, hey, this is what our kids are saying. We need to fix some of this stuff. And that's really helped improve the culture and climate of our building because we're getting it directly from the students and hearing what they want. And it's given them a voice.
So is this something that you put out weekly? How often, or is there a schedule? And
it's kind of something we've just kind of done about once a month, but we have students that are wanting to start making it into a weekly item just because there's more kids that want to be heard. So we may be moving it to a weekly podcast now as we start here in the new year.
And are there most of the time, is it the same students or do they vary on who speaks on the podcast?
That's one of the nice things is we in our school, we offer every Wednesday. We have the last hour of the school day is just an hour of kind of a full elective opportunity. It's an intervention period. So students that need some extra help can get work with their teachers. Other students that might want to have an extension to their work can then be pushed a little bit. And then other students that just want something new to do can go to various teachers, and those teachers are offering simply extension opportunities of any sort. So you might be able to go to your welding class and learn how to do some more welding, or you might have a teacher in the math department that's teaching kids how to play cribbage, or you might have an English teacher that's doing Dungeons and Dragons. So whatever it might be. And so we actually have that podcast class during that time. And so pretty much each week, it's a whole new group of students that want to come and learn something new, and or it might be that they just want to come and speak and share their insight. So it's pretty much always a new group, and we try to keep it about to 8 to 10 kids, but each time it's a pretty much a brand new group every single time.
Cool. So there's a lot of interest in kids just putting their voices out there.
Yeah. And they kind of view it as it's more of almost like that, the suggestion box that you might have in a building. But this is their verbal suggestion box. So they come prepared with something that they want to talk about because it matters to them. And so usually we kind of start the show not knowing really what any of the topics are, and we just give them a chance to be heard.
So you've also worked producing student films as well. So tell me about how you got started in that. And you've also been to some film festivals and helping students with college applications.
So that actually started really because of the COVID shutdown. Once we started back into school, we just didn't have a way, especially being with theater, we didn't have our audiences willing and excited and ready to come back to a full-scale show. So fortunately for us, because it used to be that if you videotaped or tried to live stream a play, it was pretty much guaranteed you were going to have a lawsuit immediately because the rights for plays and musicals especially were so strict that they're like, no, you are not recording these. You are not supposed to put them out on the internet. This is, you know, that if you do that, we're going to pull your license and you're not going to produce any of our shows again. But after COVID, all of a sudden we had production companies that were saying, hey, we need audiences to still see our shows. We need to find extra revenue. So live streaming all of a sudden went from being this taboo topic to being embraced by numerous companies. So we were able to start live streaming all of our theater shows. So even if there were family members at home that weren't ready to come back into the theater and sit with hundreds of other people, they could watch from the comfort of their own home, which was amazing, because then we also started seeing kids having family members from all over the country. Some grandparents who'd never seen their grandkids ever perform on stage because there's numerous states away, were suddenly watching from home and interacting with our live stream because they're like, wow, I've never been able to see my granddaughter perform. Thank you so much for doing this. And so that was huge. And so our students that were running and learning how to do the live streaming and were working with the camera equipment, they started to gain a love of being behind the camera. And it was those students who actually came and said, hey, we have this equipment. Would you be willing to let us use it for additional purposes instead of just live streaming? Could we start filming our own stuff? And I said, absolutely. Again, but one of the best ways to learn is to learn by doing. So go for it. They started writing their own stories. We started finding some local film festivals that they could enter here within our state. And it just, all of a sudden, once you had one student that was filming, then the next year we had two kids that wanted to. Then the next year it was three. I think this last year at our most recent film festival, we had five student entries. So that's five directors. Each director had, I think, two other students that were running cameras and filming with them. And then they had at least 5 to 10 actors in each of their films that were performing. And I mean, it's been growing. So more kids are saying, well, I want to learn about this, or I want to do this. And others are saying, I want to be in front of the camera. I want to be one of the actors for your films. And so they're to a point where they're actually holding auditions, and kids are really excited about being a part of this. And at the last, in October, they did kind of a horror film festival. Again, these are short films, about 7 minutes long, but we had five entries, with two of our students being nominated for four awards each. And one of those kids actually ended up coming home with the overall best picture at that film festival.
Wow.
And yeah, that was just, it was amazing. Just especially going from something that, you know, our kids really had no idea, you know, during their freshman year what it was. And now they're here, their senior year is winning awards and being we're working on that, get acceptance into college for film programs.
And I think like that is a growing trend now among high schoolers. Like, they've always put video out on the internet, but like being able to like produce something to the point where it is put out to festivals and being able to, you know, start that early for kids that want to get into that field. So it's great that you're helping them along the way, and just seeing that that got started just from those live streams. So we've had a great conversation today around your work and how you left education and then came back with the encouragement of former students and both the film and the podcast. Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
The biggest thing, I think, is just surround yourself with good people. That's really, for me, I mean, it's one thing to be, if you're that go-getter, you're that, but I wasn't. I really struggled because I was influenced by who I was around. And if that influence is negative, it can end up being very damaging. And it was for me. It just made me, I just became a very negative person. But once I rid myself of people who were hoping to see me fail, and surrounded myself with people who were determined to see me succeed, that made all the difference. That's allowed me to do these things, right? You know, I mean, we look at all these things that people might say, wow, you sure do a lot as a teacher. Well, it's because I have an administration and leadership that says, hey, you want to help improve your students? Go for it. They let me do these things. I don't feel burdened by it. I'm uplifted and inspired because I have leadership that says, if doing a podcast is going to help students, do it. If doing short films is going to help students, do it. You know, they're just willing to say, hey, give it a shot. If it works, great. If it doesn't, stop it and find something else. But yeah, having that kind of leadership that just makes me feel valued, and that even if my ideas might seem a little crazy, they're willing to let me try it and see if it works before they decide if it's bad or not. That's huge. And so that just allows me to just be who I am and do what I do, and to feel that what I'm doing matters because I have great leadership that is willing to let me try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's goes a long way in like taking this step to, you know, putting those films in film festivals and taking the time to have that podcast club and getting kids set up with equipment and learning how to podcast. So yeah, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Any all social media at Bradley W. Skinner. That's Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-E. So yes, two E's. So Bradley W. Skinner. You find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, even TikTok. Or you can always find me Bradley.Skinner at any of the email endings, Gmail, Outlook, Live, Yahoo, Hotmail, all of them. I've got all of them. So, yeah.
Great.
But we certainly love to connect and share more. And if you want a great opportunity to have me come and speak in your school, I will stay that night and DJ a dance for you.
Well, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. It was a pleasure speaking with you and hearing about all that you do to support your students.
Thank you.
My book, Out of the Trenches, Stories of Resilient Educators, has now been published. You can access it through Amazon. You can buy it at the Road to Awesome website, or you can get it through my website at danagoodyear.com. Please leave a review, and you can also access it on Kindle. Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.